This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good morning and welcome everybody to this hopefully first of many breakouts this weekend for y'all. Today we're going to be hearing from Trent Eikenberry on Building Enduring Ministries. Little information about him, in case you don't know him. He's from near Dayton, Ohio. He's a minister in the Old German Baptist New Conference Church and husband and father of seven children. He's invested heavily in the SALT program in Nigeria and lived there for several years. I think that's been his full-time job for many of the last few years here. And he's working to build a long-term sustainable program in Nigeria that is effective and secure for the next 15-plus years in a violent and unstable country without having American staff living on the ground. It's his vision and passion to build programs that will be blessed of the Lord and stable as God allows over the long term. So I'm sure we'll learn a lot today from his experience in building long-term ministries. So let's turn our attention to him.
Thank you. It's nice to not really have to introduce yourself. I don't know if you've had that experience before, but when you have to introduce yourself, you do it differently than someone else might. One of the things that I want to say going on, and maybe I'll just ask this question now, how many of you are within the first 2 years of building the ministry you're part of? A couple of you. How many of you are within the first 5 years of... I saw a hand kind of moving like that. Okay, what about, less than 10 years? More than 10 years. Okay, so we've got a pretty diverse group. I fall in there somewhere in the middle, probably. I've been involved with this about 6 years, and they asked me to speak on this, and so in some ways, many of you will be ahead of me, I'm sure. Obviously, as we begin, enduring ministries, the idea of this is to end up with something that withstands the threats that come in time. Economic threats are just major. Now, we live in a country where, the economy's been stable for a long time, but will it always be that way if you look forward a few years? Relationship threats. Just the inner workings of your ministry between themselves, the board, the committees, the staff on the ground, all of that. Those are threats that we face. Perhaps vision drift or mission drift. Over the years, when we talk about 5, 10, 15 years, we're talking about some kind of drift that can come into our experience and threaten the enduring ministry that we're trying to build. And so, certainly we're not going to address everything in 40 minutes or so. I would like to leave a little time for discussion at the end. We'll hopefully be able to do that. So let's go on. Why enduring ministries are important. Does everyone understand what I mean when I say stakeholder? Okay. A stakeholder, in brief, is anyone that has an interest financially, just a concern, a family member that's sent, a home church. It just is kind of a broad and enduring term. But one of the points that I want to make here, and there are many that could be made, is that American culture is rife with an appetite for change and a lack of commitment. We see that all around us, and it's important that we demonstrate in our churches and in our organizations a level of stability that transcends generations. Do you agree with that? Just one reason why it's important for ministry to endure. And so I said every ministry is a witness to both the recipients of the ministry and the local church or the local community that is sending them. There's a dual ministry that happens in every single situation, and we need to be conscious of that. It's going to make a difference, I believe, in how we endure. I'm kind of saying the same thing again in one way, that commitment, endurance, in difficulty, consistency are fundamental demonstrations that every society in the world needs. Whether you're working in New York City, whether you're working in Papua New Guinea, Haiti, some of you are, in different places around the world, this is still a very active demonstration that is very, very important. And I'm using this word national up there, sort of interchangeably with locals. I know not all of you are involved in ministry internationally. So I'm going to say national. That's an American, that's a Nigerian, that's a Haitian. You know, there's a distinction there just between the stateside stakeholder or a national stakeholder. And so in some ways, they're invested in that. A ministry that just comes in, fails, and hops out can cause more damage than even one that maybe isn't achieving all of its goals over a long period of time. Consistent application of truth across time is still the best evangelist. You know, I think that we're becoming more aware of that, and even the evangelical churches are becoming more aware of that short-term ministries are not as effective as was once thought. You can't just go in, preach the gospel, get people to make a confession, receive a baptism, move on, and expect endurance across the years. And so that's that statement I'm making there, consistent application of truth is really the best evangelist across time. Now, we're talking about stateside and national stakeholders. Is that all the stakeholders that there are in our ministry?
No.
Amen. That's not right. God is the primary stakeholder in our ministry. If we are doing God's will, He has invested more. He's put more time. He's put more energy. He's put more resources. He's put most of what is taking place there. And sometimes the argument is, and this is a point that you may not just get by reading what's on the board there. Sometimes we weigh this thing. Well, you know, are we going to be able to keep this up? And so we're not sure whether we should have long-term goals. And I'm just challenging that a little bit. Because if you read in Matthew 6:30, you read where God takes care of the grass, it says, that is hewn down tomorrow and cast into the fire. Isn't that interesting? He knows you're going to cut that tree down in your woods tomorrow, and yet He is still supplying sustenance to it and giving it life, even up to the point where the chainsaw hits the trunk and it falls. Why is that? Well, it's a demonstration to us of His commitment to His work. And I think we should feel committed like that. Even if we have some uncertainties, that doesn't mean we need to reduce the energy and effort we're putting into what we're doing. His testimony is at stake in what we do and how. Programs and ministries that fail or exhaust their resources before their time are a bad witness. Very simple point. Now, here's really the points that we're going to make today. And I will say this, if you're interested after this, I'll be glad to send you PDF copies of these slides. Most of what I care to say is on the slides. But an enduring ministry is relationally secure. It communicates the vision to all stakeholders. It has quality team communication. It's financially buoyant. It's equipping nationals for growth and responsibility. And it's responsible with media mediums. And those are the six basic points that we're going to make. Let's jump right in. Relationally secure. Now, obviously, most ministries have a sending party, and you can call this whatever, a mission board, a committee, a sending church, all of those things. But there's several vital ingredients, I believe, that need to be in those people. Okay? A firm grasp and commitment to the long-term vision of the ministry. Would you say that's important? Amen. Okay, that's a pretty basic thing. They faithfully and fairly represent the standards and the vision of the sending church. Now, that means that they they are kind of a medium. When we're making decisions in the field, you know, they are also representing the sending party. That's a fairly important point. But when I say fairly, it means that they're flexible with it. They understand what's going on the ground and in the inner city or wherever you're working. And we're making sure that there's good communication between the people that expect the work to be done and the people on the field. They're capable of needed spiritual and administrative functions. You know, sometimes very basic things. Giftings need to be there. Organization. You know, some grasp of technology and how that works and what we can use and things like that. It's just a vital thing. It's more than just enthusiasm or a volunteer spirit, I guess what I'm saying. And they provide a thorough evaluation of potential missionaries, quality training for service, ongoing support, and all those things. Next, you have the group that is the missionary staff serving on the field. And again, these are not all the points that can be made. These are just some because I didn't know who I'm talking to that I thought I'll bring up quickly. Missionary staff serving on the field, and I want to just strongly reiterate this point, have already been missionaries in their own community. And so that's the job of the mission board is to evaluate and prepare the people that are going. If you've never witnessed to your neighbors and you've never been involved in their life, right in your own hometown, what are you going to do when you get across the world? Is that an important point? I think it is. They have a sound grasp of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Pretty basic. They're in harmony with and committed to a local church. I think that's important as well. You heard that statistic this morning that over 50% of people change churches when they come back. Well, we need to look at that on both sides of the equation. And they relate well with people very, very different from them. I mean, those are things that need to be looked at if we're going to endure. And I want to say this. I forgot to put it in my notes, but staff turnover is a big deal. Just going in, 2 years, you're back out, new ones come. That can really be disruptive to the nationals. The national or the ministry target group need to be treated with absolute dignity and respect. They need to be viewed as one of the most valuable contributors and the most valuable assets for the cause of the ministry. And ministry staff must relate closely to nationals, spend time in their homes, build relationships with. Now, those are fairly basic points, and you might say, well, yeah, I agree with that. But I've lived in the field and I've watched all of this stuff being defied by people who are sent. People that wall themselves off in a little isolated place and they don't get out. They don't know what's going on in society. They don't relate. It's a problem. And there begins to be a disconnect and a wall. And you know, there begins to be a hierarchy sometimes. The important ones are here and you're the beneficiary. We need to look at that. An enduring ministry communicates the vision to all stakeholders. And I want to just be clear, we're not going to talk about this very much, but when we communicate effectively to the people that are involved in our ministry, God knows. Okay, God knows. So I'm talking about sending entities, stateside churches, and I'm including the missionaries and Christian workers in the stateside. But there's also families. There's churches and friends of the sent, and they have an invested interest in what's happening. And it's important we communicate clearly with them so they understand, especially in a time of crisis, donors, volunteers. On the national side, you know, national stakeholders are the people even benefiting or receiving the ministry. National workers, some of you have worked in these environments before, but there are a lot of other people that are crucial and beneficial to this ministry. Local churches, if they exist. You know, it's good for them to know who you are, why you're doing what you're doing. Be able to communicate that clearly to community or government leaders. This is a basic business truth, but we heard it this morning. I was just really glad those nine ministries stepped up and gave a one-sentence explanation who they are. You could get a hold of them. And so it's important for ministries to build a to have a vision statement, just a one sentence, inspirational, communicates what is unique about your ministry and why. The second thing would be a mission statement that goes into a little bit more detail and describes that, where someone that really is interested, maybe even someone in the country where you're working with, they get a good grasp of it. They understand it. Do I want to be involved? Can I come in and be part of this? Goal statements are important as well. And this is just some specific, measurable, achievable goals that we can get a hold of and work towards. And people know that. This is what we're doing. Okay, and when I say achievable, I don't mean just idealistic. You know, I mean what we can do and we can congratulate our staff for when we achieve it. If this can be effectively communicated in a short, digestible format, you're on your way to success. And if you were to visit our offices in Nigeria, you'll find these things posted prominently so our staff know them. And we review it. And we talk about it. And we try to make sure that we are digesting the essence of the ministry that we're involved with. Like that. Make sure I haven't really looked at my notes, so I want to make sure I haven't just completely lost where we're going. Quality team communication. Is that important? Absolutely. More so in our world today than it used to be. Develop things like standard operating procedures, SOPs. Not a Bible of information, but the relevant information on why we or what we are doing and how we're going to achieve it. Some policies, some plans for if crisis happens. And this should be developed, I believe, with staff on the ground who are both stateside and nationals, and also with the sending parties, so that we understand what we're doing. We're clear on it. If we have a problem, we just refer to it. Yep, that's what we said we'd do, and we do it. Not real complicated. Financial reports. I think those should be regular. Digestible. Okay, simplified into something so not everyone can read a complex financial statement. Put it into a graph, a little summary that everyone can understand. Yeah, all right, we're doing fine. We get it. Annual or quarterly reports. Key persons who operate the field ministry evaluate and communicate progress. And you know, and we don't do this as well. I put this in there because it's a goal that I have. We need to be able to, for those of us working on the field, we need to develop that skill of communicating to our stakeholders what we're doing. You know, it's not boasting necessarily, but trying to put into a digestible format the progress that we're making, the failures that we're experiencing. A way that we can report to someone and give an account for what's happening out there. People who are financially invested in a ministry need to know that. You know, we're not in an age, the older generation is more like that. We'll talk about this in the buoyancy section more. But the older generation is more apt to just send a check to a ministry and they're fine. I believe our generation is, we're wanting some feedback. We want to know, listen, did we just waste this investment? Or is it doing what we intend? I think it's just kind of key. And so that's a way that people on the ground can get that information out and tell someone about it. I also think that the sending church or the committee, the board, also has a responsibility to clearly and regularly communicate with the people on the ground. What decisions are you making back here while we're living over here across the world? You know, and I've seen this problem, or maybe nothing's happening, and the people are just wondering, well, do we have anyone behind us if this thing gets into trouble? Okay, so that, you know, we're just talking about some simple ways to communicate, and newsletters from the staff on the ground are somewhat important. You can get a somewhat of a picture of what's happening out there, what's going on. You know, even the sending parties or the sending stakeholders can get an idea of what's going on just by a regular newsletter or something. So again, we're just talking about a flow of digestible quality information. We plan to do it. And it's kind of like budgeting. It's got to be simple. Maybe I have that. No, I don't have it. It's got to be simple or you throw it away. I mean, I teach that over and over, that in budgeting, this thing has got to work and be real to life and simple. Or 2 months down the road, you're done. And I'm not going to read a bunch of 6- and 8-page reports, but how can we get it into something digestible that we can work with? Good forums for effective communication. Face-to-face as often as is reasonable. You know, Zoom's taken us a long ways, but it still lacks the ability, body language, all of that stuff, and we still feel disconnected at the end of that meeting. And so we just need to have an intention. Can we do it? We get together and just talk, share, shake hands, all of that stuff. You know, obviously around the world, and there's some controversy about this, but WhatsApp has been the most effective and cleanest way to quickly and rapidly send voice messages, pictures, information, you know, and text all across the world. And you can include a lot of people on that. I also like the idea of teaching programs where both stateside stakeholders and the national stakeholders participate. We get together and we learn to know each other and how to relate, because we might have a goal that doesn't actually apply in the country we're working in. Practice taking quality minutes of meetings. Very important for a later reference point in communication. And again, we don't have to put out pages of meeting notes, but learn to take a quality, capture the essence of what was talked about in that meeting so that it can be shared with someone else that needs to know. And again, this really relates a lot to the threat of relationships breaking down. You know, so if you want to just summarize real easily, what I'm trying to say is we've got to be intentional about communicating in a quality way. And that doesn't just flow one way. I've been on the field, and you just send out information, and no one responds. And eventually the value is diminished. And then they say, well, where'd that go? You quit sending stuff. Why? Well, it doesn't seem like anyone's listening, you know? and so it's got to be intentional on both sides is what I'm getting at. I mean, because really, you know, I need to say this more than once, but if you're planning to be involved in this ministry for many, many years, I mean, this is foundational. And it needs to be corrected if it's not working. Is that too strong to say? Or are we okay? We're all right? Okay. Let's go on here. We got to get halfway through this thing before the halfway point hits us. Financially buoyant. Now, this is kind of a transition in thought to the idea of a stable ministry, because it takes finances. Let's face it. That is a real part of this. We want to be a ministry. We want to be faith-based. We want to serve God like that. But we have got to realize that there are some effective business principles that really need to be applied. And I don't think that defies faith. We're applying it. This first point is already up there, just so you'd see it. Maintain a steady, replenishing donor base. Now, I think the next point says it's easier to raise funds and supporters early than it is to maintain a steady flow of cash to support ministry operations. And that has got to be our intention, whether you're building from the ground up right now or whether you're 10 years down the road. We've got to realize that increasingly so, the younger generation is not just handing out cash without any idea of what's attached to it. So I just put this is kind of my own little makings. I didn't take any of what I'm sharing here today out of any book. These are my thoughts, so you can blame me for them. But oftentimes we overlook this 12 to 20 year old donor. I mean, you know, they don't, they're not writing the big checks. But why are we not developing them to get involved in our ministry, in resources, in not just money, but giving time and such, you know, because they're going to hit this point when they start working, when they start building their business, when they start investing in God's kingdom. And we want to make sure that they are understanding what we're doing. And so I think that's often an overlooked part of this, is that we're not focusing on, you know, these young guys sitting right here today. This is powerful. This is building a pattern in their life that will involve them. 21 to 35, they're smaller current donors, but they're starting to give steady resources. And we need to pay attention to them because they're the big businessmen of tomorrow. And oftentimes that's where we really focus. We go after the guys with money. Maybe you don't, but it's easy to think that way. Hey, let's get a big check today. But you know, really what's better for a ministry is a steady monthly income. And obviously, you know, you can see in those categories that over 60, they're a tremendous resource, but they are a diminishing commodity. Eventually, their finances are managed by someone else. Very important to have an early vision. I think I covered that. Long-term vision of efficient use of resources. And I'm just speaking more on the ground, but that also applies in the U.S., what we do, how we do it. And I feel like today's decisions should always be measured by a 10-year effect. And what I mean by this, this was easier to describe in my notes, but I'm not going to look at it right now. You know, like when we're making decisions on the ground, we have got to think, is what I'm doing today, whether it's, you know, we deal with a lot of staff. We have 24 full-time staff in Nigeria. They're Nigerians. They're not Americans. And so we deal a lot with how much do we pay our people? And what are the implications of this? If we just start a trend of giving a bonus, you know, around Christmas time, can we sustain that? Is that going to be okay in 10 years when the crimp is on? The raises or the way we advance their wages, can we do that? Can we hold that line for 10 years if they stay with us? That's just an example of what I'm talking about. Teach staff the consequences of waste, but also how money is wasted at times if we're too tight. And I know Clint will laugh at this, but that's just the reality where, okay, now you teach them, you know, efficient use of finances, and now it's time to buy a new generator. And you can buy one for $150 that'll last a year, or you can buy one for $350 that'll be around for several years. And you know, that has to be shared equitably or understandably in all of this. Our expense and use of funds should be reviewed regularly to determine trends and excesses. And what I was thinking in this is that if we do this and even look at our expenditures year after year, the cost of our program year after year, you can start to see, you know, we've done this for 6 years now. I've got good data. I can see what's going on. Hey, we need to watch out in this area. We can tighten up here a little bit, or we need to invest more into this. But we need to just steadily review that. Someone does. We also should be able to prove our efficiency to our donors. And again, that's just an important way. Put it into digestible information so that the people invested in your ministry can get a hold of it. This one here, I often speak to deaf ears, and it's okay if you feel that way. Resources set aside for future shortfalls. Now this comes down to donor intent, and it comes down to how confident we are that our economy will keep contributing the same amount of needed resources to get that annual budget supplied year after year after year. But I just firmly and passionately believe that ministries should have a set amount that is set aside to cover a shortfall in the future for any reason, really. And today's economy is vibrant, tomorrow's in doubt. Another thing you have to think about, exchange rates, the value of the dollar, and confidence in the U.S. dollar has only inflated over the last 5 to 10 years. And we are operating in countries much cheaper than we could be if the world loses confidence in the U.S. dollar. And someone needs to be paying attention to that, because your annual budget could actually grow by a third without any single effect that you ever made happen. Okay? It hasn't happened. In Nigeria, we exchanged dollars for 365 naira 5 years ago. Today, we're getting 580 naira for the dollar. It has just constantly went up, but that is going to stop at some point. I believe this is wisdom in both business and ministry. I am for faith, but we use our advantage today for tomorrow's need. Let's go on again a little bit. Equipping nationals for growth of responsibility. We are truly successful if our ministry achieves its objective long after we are gone. Okay, or the missionaries are gone. It must be our vision to put in place the elements for our national staff and beneficiaries to develop far beyond us. And I reference John 3:30. You know, that was John's vision. I must decrease and he must increase. And I think it's an important part. Now, there are a lot of different ministries. We're not saying you can just do away with American staff. But what happens if crisis comes and civil war is suddenly upon us? And what are you going to do? Is your ministry scattered by that? If we're going to endure, can the people that you have in place there keep something going until you can get back and in place like that? We must actively demonstrate true servant leadership for endurance to take place. This results in nationals being equipped to grow into greater and greater levels of responsibility in ministry. And I'm just saying, this was Christ's example that's worked for 2,000 years. And he was dealing with national brothers too. They were his own. All key staff should be training understudies. All of us must be humble enough to be replaced. And this is kind of a key thing. Right now in what I'm doing in our ministry, I really feel like it's soon going to become time for me to step out of the way for the safety of the endurance of the ministry. And the reason why, is because what happens? I'm sorry, I think I'm a point ahead. I've got another point. What happens if one or two key people of your ministry are killed in a car accident tomorrow? And you know, it's nice when everyone pats you on the back and says, yeah, you're doing a great job, man. We're glad to be behind you. But if you're gone, what happens? So we teach our staff, or we're trying to. It's hard to convince them to train an understudy. Something happens, there's someone that can come right in. Our constant plan and goal must be to pass off more and more function and ministry to trusted nationals. And this is a vital function of true discipleship. And so I'm a believer, and this is our ministry is more hands-on with national brothers than some. But we need to have this vision in mind. This is servant leadership, like Jesus taught and exemplified. And that's a function of true discipleship. Threats to endurance. And I hit this one just a little bit, but you've got to think carefully. In country and in the stateside, if one or two of these key people are suddenly gone, what happens? How long will it take to straighten that mess out? And are there some things we can put into place that would soften that blow? You know, the brother just takes another position and, hey, I'm gone. That happens sometimes. One of your key nationals that you depend on does the same thing. The dignity and importance of our national staff or beneficiaries is not honored and preserved. And I'm saying that is a threat when we do not value these dear people that invest in our ministry, even beneficiaries of them. If that dignity is lost, we are under threat. We have to find new people to have confidence in us. And then there's another problem. Nationals are given too much responsibility too quick, and we've got to apply discernment. You cannot handle someone that has never had money and possibility is life and say, now manage this $50,000 that the ministry has. That's, you know, that's crazy. But we've got to work with them steadily, and we've got to decide what are the limits that can be done here. All right, we'll get to the last point. And this was one when I gave the title. This is 2 years ago. They asked me to do this, and I put out these titles and said I would talk about technology a little bit. And I want to. This is kind of one of the hardest ones. I sat here and I fussed with it, and I couldn't get where I wanted to be. Is it an advantage or a disadvantage? And I made a little list over there on the right, just some things that the top line is things that we're all mostly comfortable with, I think, very comfortable with. Maybe in the middle, you know, you start to get a little bit of uncertainty. And on the bottom, some people would say, well, this is just danger, 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 you know. And I put things on there like metaverse. That's not here yet. I've been researching that. That is going to radically change our world. It's going to radically change how ministry is conducted in the world. And we're not wise to just be ignorant or carry away. I would encourage you to find sources to find out what they mean when they're talking metaverse, because that will become the next generation of what we know as internet, and it'll change the way we think about it. It's not my topic today, but I'd like to tell you more about it. Opportunities for godly communication, organization, research, and efficiency have never been greater because of technological advances. It's imperative that our ministries capitalize on this. And I said, I don't want to be a danger preacher in this case, but I want to be wise. And so you can see the flip side of that on the screen, that never has the opportunity for ungodliness been greater. And especially when you're serving in a foreign environment and you're far away from the sending church and the accountability is not right on your neck, And all this stuff is happening, and there can be a guard let down, and it can be a problem. And so it's imperative that we are a little bit concerned anyway about what's going to happen and how. Okay? How do we capitalize on and make the most of what's available to meet our ministry objectives? Okay? How do we say no? And I'll tell you, when you start to teach on this, this is one of the greatest areas I've ever found in life, because it's not easy. I can give you my opinion on what's okay and what's not. But everyone has a different perspective and a different place that we come into. So I'm going to just give you some tips called to navigate the minefield. I had some other things and I decided I think it's counterproductive. But I want to tell you some things I think are important as it relates to ministry and thinking about staff in the field, thinking about people at home. Communicate clearly and seek counsel from godly trusted brothers when you're uncertain. I mean, that is a basic point. We're not teaching innovation or something new, but we've got to keep that. All media forms are improved by true accountability and transparency. And I think we should just adopt policies that give us freedom, but tell us where the uncomfortability level exists so that we don't break a relationship for the cause of a video project or something like that. Personal commitments to Bible reading, prayer, quiet time, and deep talks with others are not negotiable. Now you'll say, brother, what do you bring this in here talking about technology? You hold your Bible and your smartphone in your hand and tell me, is it negotiable or not? You wake up in the morning and this thing right here can press right into you. And, well, cool, I meant to have devotions this morning. I meant to pray. Just didn't get there. Philippians 4:8 is still the best preliminary filter to use for deciding what, if, and how to use. Is it truthful? Is it honest? Does it have a good report? Is there purity involved in this thing? You know, is it if there be any virtue? Is there any praise? You know, it at least needs to pass those tests, and it can be debatable on how some of these mediums are with that. But we need to have conscious thought, because there is stuff that doesn't pass the test. And it might be helpful to us, but it's going to hurt us in the long run. We've got to be conscious of that. Use our broader stakeholders group as a larger conscience for our media decisions. And again, we're applying this more to ministry than personal life. But I'll tell you, this is an area where breakdown can come so quickly. You know, I'm out in the field creating media and videos and doing all this, and I'm not conscious of what other people are thinking about this. And I'm completely comfortable with it. I'm excited about it. And then someone's like, I'm not sure. Good. And so it's, you know, we've got to think about some of those in terms of where we're going and how long this thing is going to last. You know, there's not a clear line. You know, maybe if we go into video hosting and production, we need to, you kind of step into that. You don't just leap in all at one time. I don't know. You know, those are just things to think about, because who is funding and building this thing up are important people. Think long term. Again, it's just almost too simple to say, but try as much as possible to weigh decisions on how this is going to turn out 10 years from today. And we, you know, with the change that's coming on, it's really almost impossible. I just told you about the metaverse that was not on people's conscious awareness for many, many years. And we're getting closer, and we're getting closer. And again, I want to just point that out. It is going to be a radical change in how people view the world. And there are tremendous opportunities there. I want to just point out a horrible danger signal that drags us all into that. But we've got to think about it. Hey, you know, it's okay to be a few years behind the world. It is. It really is. And so that basically is the end of what I want to share. I said I was going to leave a few minutes for discussion. I think I've got almost five, three, something like that. So if you have something important you'd like to share, spit it out.
I think it's important. So you made the comment there at the beginning, I think it was good, about training and replacement. Mm-hmm. And then you said commitment. Mm-hmm. Because there is a tension there.
That's right.
Because you have these overcommitted old geezers, you know, fighting for the young guy that has. And then you also talk about technology and all the leading things that are going on there.
Yeah.
So there is, I do think in our generation, there is a extreme tension.
Yes.
So how have you worked with that?
Okay, so
have you taught, like, for instance, do you, like, tell that person that you're vetting for the new position, do you tell him his one of his roles is to train his replacement?
Well, see, and that is a problem, and we're working with this, especially with nationals. They don't like that idea of someone able to take their place, because that makes them more expendable. And yet, so we have to talk about that very, very carefully, and we've been working on that for a period of years, and our leadership structure over there, they're getting it. I have to really show them that they are not expendable in any way, but we like their commitment, but in the event something happens, we've got to have someone else in the know. And it's working.
So it's kind of a discipleship.
It's a discipleship. It always comes back to that. And I firmly believe in that. I'm talking about it later today, about discipling people and how that comes out. But okay, so now your question, though, like on a committee or a board stateside, this can be a problem, because we need commitment and we need long-term people involved, but they need to be willing to bring fresh vision and bring new people with new energy and ideas into the program. And so I'm 42. As a young man, I've decided I'm going to try to be that kind of person. And that's not easy. I face stepping back from something I've worked so hard to build, but I think it's important. Does that answer the question, or did it talk all the way around it?
No, I think you answered it. I just think it's something we really need to be intentional about.
Yeah.
But I think that it's a generational gap thing going on too, you know, older men being fearful to let younger men.
Yeah.
And I find that if you believe in younger men, they'll trust you to disciple them.
Yeah. Good.
But man, 44 and you're trying to do it, God bless you.
with nationals, you're saying you're not wanting to train somebody because then they're being, make themselves expendable. But at the same time, you could look at it from the other ways. If you're training someone to take your place, you're probably also a mentee of someone above you. Right. And so while you're training someone to take your place, maybe it's so that you can move up and always have people looking forward instead of protecting where they're at.
That's right. That's an important part, is to give them a vision of what's possible beyond their own role today. He says 0 minutes. I'm sorry. We burned up the time.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.